Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week we'll be taking a look in depth into three international education news stories that popped across our news feeds over the last few days. And we'll take a look at some of the ways that we might be able to connect with you in the coming months as well at upcoming conferences. But before we do that, we do want to send a special shout out to everybody who's watching live on Facebook or catching the recording later on either our Facebook page for SMIE Consulting or on our YouTube channel. So thanks again for taking the time out of your day to hear what we have to say about these international ed news stories that are making their way across our feeds around the world. Now, where would I like to start today? It's a really interesting week. We've been hearing some news coming out of China that we'll talk about in a little bit. So there's going to be some information on a story on accreditation, accreditors and fake universities we'll have a little bit later on. But I do want to start with a story that I've just put together for IDP. IDP Connect, that is, in a series I run for their higher ed community, for U.S. higher education institutions in particular, and it's about digital marketing beyond your institutional website. Now, for those of you who know me, and Hussein, thanks for joining in, hope you're well. Those of you who know me know that digital marketing, social media is really where my heart is, and certainly digital marketing and websites are interlinked, as we know. But one thing that I've found over the years is how, particularly on international recruitment, international admissions offices, how often disconnected the university's main social media sites are from what is going on or should be going on when it comes to international student recruitment. So that's what really prompted this piece. It's the first in a series for IDP Connect that I'm running called International Student Recruitment Priorities. This first edition is talking about digital marketing beyond your website. And what we're talking about here are really three ways that many universities might do one or two of these, but rarely do all three and never, almost never, do all three well. And that's something that I think it bears a lot of attention in this kind of a climate, political climate. And I allude to it in the article in that admissions offices these days, international admissions offices, are really fighting an uphill battle in almost every sense of the word. And I refer to it as our Sisyphean challenge that we often seem to be rolling that same boulder up the hill every day when it comes to getting the right messaging out about our institutions, when it comes to convincing our institutional leadership about our priorities and why we're doing what we're doing internationally and why we need to be engaged in certain activities that maybe they've not done domestically or haven't heard of domestically. So I think it's important, and I've put the link to the story in the comments section on the Facebook page, but it really helps you get a sense, I think, on what, and the picture that I'm painting with this article is really how maybe in the late 90s when institutional websites were really becoming en vogue and that everybody had to have one, and that as they developed in the early 2000s and into the noughties and teens, you saw institutions really get a little bit more sophisticated about how they managed their websites and developed entire units, marketing communication offices that would take over ownership of the website and manage content and really seeing it as a public-facing tool, which certainly it is and continues to be so today. But what also happened in the noughties is you saw the rise in the late noughties, the rise of social media, and the rise of college search sites becoming much more prominent in students' searches for institutions, and particularly as they looked at various countries that they might be considering for their studies. So what the article focuses on is really ways that institutions can and should be leveraging social media to reach international student audiences. We all know our domestic platforms are also accessible to most of the rest of the world, but not all. And what that means in certain countries, we know all know about China and their various different social media that that students use in that country to find out information. We also know about other countries like in Japan, Line is a prominent messaging app that's being used currently, the most popular social media platform there. So there's other things that we need to be focusing on, because when we get our messaging out to students, yes, the website is important. It's bedrock to where a good percentage of students who are gonna, and parents who are gonna find out about you are gonna get their information. You wanna make sure that's right. But you also need to be reaching students where they're spending their time. And social media is clearly that. And it may be different in different countries as to which platforms are more popular. But if you have targeted regions, targeted markets, targeted countries around the world that you're trying to get your message in front of directly, being on the social media platforms that students in those countries are using is important. So that social media piece is certainly one I cover in the article. Also, pay attention to college search sites. And here we're talking about, yeah, you've got College Boards, My Big Future, and yeah, everybody's going to have a listing there. But I'm talking about the other search sites that students outside the United States will be using much more regularly than particularly homegrown U.S. sites. I'm talking about the hot courses, microsites that are in 12 different languages around the world, 12 and located locally hosted sites that really provide students a wider breadth of information on destinations, not just in the U.S., but Australia, Canada, U.K., all of those. And that's important to have that perspective when you are representing your institution in global circles, is that students, by and large, these days are looking at not just different universities within one country, they're looking at potentially different countries for their higher education studies, English language destination countries. And that often includes US and others. And how we position ourselves, not only in our messaging, on our website, in our e-communication strategies and social media, but also on which college search sites you have presence on and robust presence on is important. So when you look at a platform like Hot Courses that has been around for many years, got bought out by IDP 2 years ago now, and is now in the IDP Connect fold in the United States, this platform brings a lot of value. There are others like it, perhaps none that are as broad-based as Hot Courses in terms of their Hot Courses and IDP sites, student sites. Now have over 21 million students that have profiles on there to certain degrees that in terms of visiting their university content. That's for universities around the world, not just in the United States. So it's a slice of the market that it's important to realize that students that might be looking at the United States aren't always just going to get on Google and search for your university or a university in the United States. So it's important that they have options to find you other ways. Yes, they'll eventually get to your content on your website. They need to have other ways that they can get to you. Social media is one of those. For those that do find you on search sites and other sites, you want to be able to not only capture their information or capture their attention, but hopefully they get to the point where they fill out a contact card and you get more information about them, or they fill an online form, whatever it might be. But one of the other pieces with that is the last element I talk about in the article, and that's retargeting and remarketing. You might not know exactly what that means, but you know it when you see it. When you've searched for something on Amazon, a product, or you visit a certain site like Walmart.com or other Best Buy or whatever it might be, and then all of a sudden when you're back on your social media, you start seeing ads for it in your feed. And that's retargeting, remarketing. So when companies, when institutions have their information out online for prospective students, prospective customers, that they see ads, they see a search for something, then the remarketing, retargeting piece is when you've searched for something like studying in the United States and might be particular universities that have popped up in a search. Then you would then get that information popped up again through in a different format, through an ad, a video ad, or just a photo ad with a link to a website. That's retargeting remarketing. And that's one of the newer phenomenons. Certainly it's been around for about 4 or 5 years now, but certainly one that's being starting to be embraced by institutions. There are a lot of service providers that are now giving that as one of the options to how they can help institutions. So it's certainly something that if you don't have institutional capacity to do it yourself, certainly something you want to be exploring with potential service providers to get your message in front of somebody that maybe looked you up but didn't follow through, those kind of shadow inquiries that everybody gets, the shadow applicants that oftentimes we see. But before they get to an applicant stage, getting a chance to get your information in front of them again and just have those points of contact less direct and less formal and less in-your-face kind of points of contact where it's a message that you're trying to get down to an individual student. It's a way for that to be subtly showing up again and again in their streams, in their feeds, in their social media digests or web browsing habits. So this is something that I think a lot more institutions, particularly those that aren't going to be doing the huge recruitment trips, aren't getting out around the world into target regions and are relying on armchair recruitment. This is certainly one thing that you want to be considering as a weapon in your arsenal. So definitely recommend reading that, and certainly happy to talk through any way with anyone who wants to find out more about how retargeting and remarketing and social media and these college search sites can be really leveraged to your institution's benefit. So that's the first story, and it's one that I think it's kind of the subjects we're covering today. It's certainly the lighter one, lightest of the three in terms of heaviness and weight for what we do in international ed. But the next two are ones that I think are probably a little bit more disturbing. Certainly those that have been following in the news recently, International Ed Circle News, it's not a new story, but it's certainly one that we've only seen come to light in the last week or so. And this is a report of a University of Minnesota student was sentenced to 6 months in prison in China for tweets he posted while he was studying in the United States. Posted the link to the Inside Higher Ed story that broke this past week. I'm also going to put the link to the Axios story that where Inside Ed Higher Ed got their source, got their information. And I'm also going to be linking to a Twitter thread from a colleague of mine, Chris Olds. He's a geography professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. But Chris is a colleague of mine on the board of directors for Educational Credential Evaluators in Milwaukee. And he's got a really fascinating thread where he outlines some of the challenges that this the jailing of the student Luo Daiqing for the tweets that he posted while he was a student in the United States. So this is a current University of Minnesota student. Went home over the summer. There's what the basic story is. Went home over the summer and was arrested in his hometown. And ironically, that hometown is Wuhan, China, now the epicenter of the coronavirus epidemic. He was jailed for 6 months and apparently has just been released. But he was jailed for the tweets that he made while he was a student on Twitter here in the United States. So one of the comments in the article about his detention in July after returning to his hometown. He was sentenced actually in November to 6 months in prison for provocation. And the time he spent in detention counts towards that 6 months apparently. So that's why I think he has already been released. So the tweets were ones he sent in September and October of 2018. Student didn't return home over Christmas last year and went home in July of 2019. So, what's this provocation? What are these provocative tweets? Apparently, they were the provocation is the official offense. This is the language from the sentence, in the form of more than 40 comments denigrating a national leader's image and indecent pictures, which created a negative social impact. So this is, what were these negative denigrating images? For those who are familiar with China's president Xi Jinping, he has a very strong aversion to mockery, and especially when it is of the Winnie the Pooh variety. So that's one of the memes out there in China. When if you want to be critical of the president, you use a Winnie the Pooh meme. So that those comments that he made and about President Xi were obviously the fodder that was needed for the government when he was returned home to arrest him. Now, what the student's case really has going. This is a U.S. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska called for the student's immediate release. Interestingly, the University of Minnesota has been fairly quiet on this, and that they're just studying what their options are. None of their senators or representatives seem to have gotten involved. But the Inside Higher Ed story quotes this senator from Nebraska, says, "Don't forget that the Chinese Communist Party has banned Twitter, so the only people who ever saw these tweets were the goons charged with monitoring Chinese citizens while they're enjoying freedom here in the United States," he said. "This is what ruthless and paranoid totalitarianism looks like." This is Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska who said this. And that's certainly one of the more troubling things here when you think about it, is that this student was imprisoned for quotes he made, actions he took on social media that is not accessible in China, only here in the U.S. or outside of China, is only accessible outside of China without a VPN. And it's really an opportunity for academics in the U.S. to start to get on the academic freedom bandwagon and flying the flag, but it goes beyond that. And my colleague Chris Olds, who I mentioned, had this wonderful feed thread on Twitter, raises some important issues here. Here's a few of the ones he's talking about. And I'll just run through some of these questions because they're very poignant and ones that, as international admissions offices, ones that we need to be aware of as we interact with students from countries where there may be much more restrictive social media policies in place by the governments in particular. So first one, how much do the hardworking staff in our international student services units understand about the rise in global reach and a network sovereignty agenda associated with countries like China and Saudi Arabia? It goes further, what obligations do our senior leaders, including senior international officers and those overseeing international student services, have to working with international students from countries like China to understand and strategize about this phenomenon? Third, how can universities better understand where their international students are arrested when their international students are arrested in their countries of citizenship for dubious reasons like this case? Should they share accurate information about the arrests quickly and broadly? If so, who decides when and how? Fourth, what obligations do our universities have to provide our arrested students and their families in cases like this with resources for legal support and broader political support in relevant contexts here and around the world? And there's several others that he covers here. And I think it's important. I've put the link to this in the stream, in the comments section on the Facebook page. And I think it's really some important questions that most of us will never think about when it comes to just one more thing we need to be doing for our international students on campuses, but certainly one we need to be aware of, because this is a very broad significant implications for your current Chinese students on campus and future Chinese students looking to come to you. And this is something that I think if we haven't thought about it already, it needs to be on our list, particularly if you have a large concentration of Chinese students. There's been reports that on some campuses, current Chinese students feel like they're being watched or monitored by their other students that are with them, that maybe they see these people that are monitoring them as fellow students that are tools of the government in China. whatever it might be. So this is just something, a phenomenon you may be experiencing. I'd love to get your, anybody who's had experiences like that, to get your comments on these, on how that might be received. So really a fascinating story, certainly a very troubling one when it comes to the kind of effect, kind of chilling effect, frankly, it could have on current Chinese students that might be in the United States at our institutions, and their willingness to say what they feel on social or even in person for fear of retribution, like this this student at the University of Minnesota received when he returned home. So there's some interesting comments on that article, the Inside Higher Ed article, that certainly worth a read to give some perspective on how it's being viewed in international ed circles. There's even one professor who was kind of not shaming the student or blaming the victim, but certainly putting some of the responsibility on the, at the student's feet for not not being more careful about what they were posting online, knowing that this might happen. So certainly it's a cautionary tale to be at bare minimum for any current students from China that are in the United States, that it's be careful what you post because it can come back to bite you. So certainly one that we'll follow how this story develops here at the Midweek Roundup, as well as through our newsletter that we draw the stories from for this roundup each week. But definitely encourage everybody to have these kind of conversations on your campus about how you deal with these kind of Chinese student situations, or any student that is coming from a country where the government might be quite repressive when it comes to freedom of expression, and have certain policies that are implemented very harshly when it comes to, in terms of punishment, when it comes to those that cross the line. So in, from that government's perspective. So we'll certainly keep an eye on it here. Last story we're going to touch on today is one that has seen a lot of attention. The story itself on University of Farmington has certainly received a lot of attention in international ed circles over the last couple of years since that story broke almost 2 years ago. And then before that, the University of North New Jersey. One thing that and the perspective on it that I'm glad has been addressed by one of the best writers in international ed circles, Karen Fisher from the Chronicle. Her newsletter that she started a few months ago has really addressed this issue well. Her newsletter, if you're not aware, is called Latitudes, and I've posted the link to last week's edition, that addresses the visa system's accreditation problem. And this is something it's been on my list of if I had a magic wand and could fix problems in international ed, this would be one of them in terms of giving some sort of standard that we could reliably tell prospective international students about, and that has to do with accreditation. When we look at some of the more troubling issues that we've had when it comes to accreditation in the United States over the last several years, they have generally revolved around visa mills and fake universities. What has happened in this respect is you have a series of accrediting bodies in the United States that are under the CHEA umbrella, the Council of Higher Education Accreditation, that is a body that oversees, is a kind of an organization body for the accreditors, all the different accrediting bodies. Most of the top institutions in the country, top 1,000 institutions in the country, are all regionally accredited institutions, and beyond are regionally accredited by one of the six regional accreditation bodies, from New England Association to Middle States to Southern States to North Central towards Western States, Pacific Northwest states. All of these are accrediting bodies that are kind of what are seen as, have generally been seen as, the gold standard when it comes to accrediting in the United States, since again in the U.S. we don't have a Ministry of Ed that accredits all institutions or approves all institutions. So this CHEA organization represents all the accrediting bodies, and there are accrediting bodies in there that are not regional, that are not programmatic, Like we know about ABET, and we know about which are engineering and technology programs, STEM programs. It's not AACSB for business. It's not some of the nursing programs and other ones that have very specific national program accreditation for the academic side. These are the career and vocational education programs. The for-profit world relies almost exclusively on these national accrediting bodies for their legitimacy when it comes to accreditation. So what has happened in the past is, and Karen Fisher's article here, Fake Colleges, Real Accreditor Edition, really speaks to the challenges that accrediting bodies have been set up and have made it somehow onto these CHIA lists or have gotten SEVA's approval to issue I-20s. They have they've turned out to be completely fraudulent, and the institutions that are accredited by these fraudulent accreditors very loose accrediting bodies, I should say, in some cases like ASICS, which has been banned and subsequently had their ban overturned, and one other career colleges accrediting bodies, ACSCS, I think is the name of it, is the ACCSC is the other one. They are ones that are not, don't have the stringent requirements that a lot of the regional accrediting bodies do. So what's happened is these national accrediting bodies that are accrediting for-profit colleges largely, a lot of the visa mills that were shut down in the late noughties and early teens were ones that were accredited by the either ASICS or these ASCCS organizations, these national accreditors for career and vocational education. They were also the ones, ironically, that ICE and DHS used to set up University of North New Jersey, set up under, and University of Farmington, both established under the Obama administration. And certainly Farmington has been gotten the most press in the last couple of years since it broke. Both of those were these national accrediting bodies played along with DHS as they were setting up these fake universities that in order to issue legal documents to these students through SEVIS, managed again by DHS, they had to be accredited schools. And University of North New Jersey, University of Farmington, both obtained with the help of these national accrediting bodies, ACCSC, yes, Accrediting Commission of Career Schools and Colleges was the one in the Farmington one that's gotten the most press recently. That right now is the only for international students. That they know they can't attend a university unless it has SEVIS approval or DHS approval to issue immigration documents like I-20s and DS-2019s if you're looking at J's. So this is the challenge. These national accrediting bodies that have in the past accredited visa mills that have allowed them to get SEVIS accreditation to allow them to bring in international students, or in Farmington's case, to have international students, not from directly from abroad, but international students who were in the country already on OPT that were looking to maintain their work permission through the CPT window that is created through schools like Farmington, the fake schools like Farmington, but also some nonprofit schools that have used this CPT hook for graduate students to keep them working while they're attending their institutions for graduate programs. There's a couple of institutions in Kentucky that have been notorious for kind of bending the rules, to keep their international student numbers up and revenue streaming in, so that with minimal, if any, on-campus time each term. So this is something that is going to continue to be a problem, I think. And looking at And Karen points this issue out quite well with her piece, is that when SEVIS was initially rushed into operation post 9/11, this is one of the holes that was pointed out. That yes, DHS had to approve all institutions, and that one of the factors they look at in the initial certification is where is their accreditation from, but they really didn't look at quality of accrediting body, and they didn't use that as one of the criteria, and that led to a lot of the problems. But the whole fact that the DHS used used substandard accrediting bodies to collude with them on setting up these fake universities that gave legitimacy to them from international student perspectives on the outside looking in, that's obviously the bigger that's the elephant in the room on this one. So that's all we have for today on the roundup. Thank you everybody for joining in and either watching live or the recordings on the Facebook page or the YouTube channel. And I want to give a special shout out to those who are subscribing on the podcast feed, and whether that's through iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Really glad you're with us and making us a part of your week. And look forward to catching up with you all next week on the roundup or at a conference down the road, either NACAC or International ACAC I'll be attending this year. So looking forward to catching up in person, if not online, in the coming weeks and months. Cheers.